James Mann has joined us in conversation. Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon, and somehow Ronald Reagan.
Well, and I don't want it to pass. When we talk about the Washington policy elite, foreign policy elite, right in the middle of this opposition were Nixon and Kissinger.
For sure. During this period, again, contrary to image, we have an image of Nixon and Kissinger as the architects of detente with the Soviet Union, the opening to China. And, of course, that's based on their time in office in the early 70s. But, in fact, during this period in the 1980s, they were challenging Ronald Reagan not from the left, but from the right. They were more hawkish than Reagan. Why? Really, for there are two reasons. Again, there's this argument, is Gorbachev, is he any different from other Soviet leaders? Nixon really buys into the what I call the imagery of the Cold War. I called it the metallurgy of the Cold War, because mm-hmm. the cliches of the Cold War, Soviet Union always is steel, iron, and so on. People describe, you know, I think Charles Krauthammer, the columnist, said Gorbachev has steel teeth, something like that. Well, in fact, Nixon bought into that. And Nixon, who always prided himself on top-level meetings. Really, Nixon's claim to fame is, I've met more leaders in the Soviet Union and China than anybody else. And in fact, he has. He goes to meet Gorbachev in early 86, and he records his impressions. He compares Gorbachev to previous Soviet leaders, to Khrushchev, to Brezhnev. And he says, you know, Gorbachev, there's always a velvet glove, but inside there's a steel fist. And he says, and then Kissinger comes to write, you know, really that Gorbachev's aim, and this is we get to the serious part, what's the purpose of Gorbachev's leadership? It's in they interpret it as reasserting Soviet power or extending Soviet power. It turns out to be, you know, fabulously untrue.
I was really taken with a dozen different things. You've done a magnificent job of going back and showing me things that I didn't know I knew. I thought when Nixon went away, Nixon went away. Holy cow. Yeah. Nixon and Kissinger are all over this. Well,
I never liked Kissinger, and by the time I got through with this book, I liked him a lot less.
Well, likewise Nixon, and Nixon continues to be stirring things up.
Well, people these days are coming back to Nixon again because of the play and movie Frost Nixon. Mm. And that represents a time in a couple years after Nixon leaves office when he is, for the first time, trying to reassert himself in the public eye. Ultimately, that succeeds very slowly. I mean, he succeeds in getting public attention again. And what is it for? And in the 1980s, he brands himself as the leader of the foreign policy elite. And so as Reagan and Gorbachev are proceeding to try and really do something about nuclear weapons and to negotiate with each other, Nixon becomes sort of the voice of the establishment saying, don't trust these guys.
I have a young friend whose interest is political theory. Mm-hmm. And I applaud that, having been interested in that myself. And I was questioning him, and he's exploring, so there's still that wonderful openness. I found myself thinking along with him about the divine right of kings. And as I read about this 30 years, and you talk about Nixon, I was thinking, these people never got over thinking, A, they're the kings, and B, they have a divine right. American people as sovereigns be damned.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
I think that does fit for Nixon, who was really heavily into the presidential role. So, I mean, he famously, you know, if the president says it's okay, it's okay. That's what he told David Frost. That's what he said in constitutional terms while he's in office.
Contrary to the Constitution.
Reagan, different reactions to it. Certainly by his last years in this period I'm writing about, when he's negotiating with Gorbachev, he's been in office 5 or 6 years, and there's certainly a regal quality to it. I describe in the book when Reagan is on his way to Berlin in 1987, the trip where he gives this speech about the Berlin Wall. He stops in Venice, and he's meeting other leaders there. In order for him to travel there, he and Mrs. Reagan have a bed that they liked transported from Spain to Venice for the conference. I can't imagine
it was
anything
comfy?
More. I assume they thought it was comfortable. Reagan certainly had tremendous trouble sleeping overseas.
Jet lag was a serious problem.
He had trouble staying awake, is what I should have said.
including sleeping through an audience with the Pope.
Right, exactly. And it was something they had in mind. So this came up in his first years in office when he fell asleep in a meeting with the Pope. And so they kept scheduling. I once went to China on a trip with Reagan, and I forget, it must have taken 4 days to get there. They stopped, and by the end of his term, they were programming in 2 or 3 days of rest per city sometimes.
The kingliness of all
right.
of that.
I want to go back to the there to me is a sub-theme in both of the books of yours I've read that you really don't talk about, but it goes to the Kissinger and the Nixon. And in a different way to Reagan, ego seems to be a major part of that.
Right.
Particularly with respect to Kissinger. I mean, and my impression by the time I got through with both of these books is that the only thing that genuinely mattered to him was his power, influence, his standing. I'm sure there must have been something else, but his behaviors, particularly with the incoming Ford administration. And the who's going to be vice president for under Bush is
Bush
is
one or two?
Bush one, Bush the elder. But the ego part of this seems to be a very important part.
Back to that king thing.
Well, it's the kingly thing, but it's also we tend to think of history as big, heavily populated, and what you've done is bring it back down to mm-hmm. just an extraordinarily personal level, which is part right. of what made Reagan so successful. And it's a remarkable thing to see.
Each of these people has ego in a different way. I mentioned Nixon's pride in meeting with top leaders. Kissinger's ego was in his own personalized diplomacy. He wanted that to be at the center of everything. So, George Bush Sr. just wrote his own diary of being in China, and the heart of that book is the fact that he was cut out of everything because, Kissinger, in dealing with China, wanted everything to go through him, always secret. My favorite moment in the Nixon-Kissinger years for the diplomacy is when Kissinger is just about to leave on his secret trip to Beijing in 1971. They decide that they better tell the Secretary of State, William Rogers, who is in theory in charge of American diplomacy, that he's going to go. He can't tell anyone else. And then they have a pang of, this is Alexander Haig, it's Kissinger's top aide at the time, have a pang of guilt. And having told Rogers that they'd been having secret diplomacy he didn't know about with China for the last 2 years, they go back to him and say, and by the way, Kissinger's also conducted secret diplomacy with the North Vietnamese, and with the Soviet Union. It was just mind-boggling. So everything had to go through him. Reagan's ego was slightly different. I mean, when it came to things like taking credit or anything, I think, verbal, he didn't have much of an ego. His ego was in performances. So I write about the Berlin Wall speech when, for Reagan, what counts to him is there was a great crowd. There was lots of applause. He cared about his public persona and not so much the personal diplomacy of the Kissinger.
He was first and foremost a performer.
Yeah. Right.
You also say that he was first and foremost. He cared basically about two things. He came in with big ideas and selling them to the American people. The end.
Right.
And wow.
And communism.
Right.
Well, the three ideas that he cared about were communism, the military and his missile thing, and then
taxes, and the third would be big government. I mean, that's yeah. one I don't begin
and,
to.
And yet, I have to compliment you in the highest terms. You managed to make me think a little differently about Ronald Reagan, which took some doing. I might add. And yet, with these very simple ideas and a fairly simple individual, he's a performer, mm-hmm. not a very good performer, he's a grade B movie star. He is able to have enough flexibility to change his mind on nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
I was dazzled by that.
Well, you know, it is a change of mind. I came to the conclusion that Reagan was actually terrified by what he saw as president. I mean, there is an interpretation, a couple people out there who do perceive the reality. You can't look at the evidence and the records without realizing that certainly by his last 5 years in office, Reagan was doing what he could to cut back on nuclear weapons, that he was more anti-nuclear than the Pentagon or the national security apparatus, and he was kind of goading them. The question is why? And there is one interpretation I don't buy, which is that he was always that way. And people have scoured through his speeches in the 70s and 60s. And, you know, more power to them. I just don't find it convincing. I think that he changed in office probably after a couple years, that around 1983, there were a couple things that all sort of came together a couple years after Reagan was in office, the fall of 83. Reagan by then had been introduced to the nuclear war plans, mm-hmm. which were scary and were scary to him. There was an incident with the Soviet Union in which, for a moment, the British and American espionage agents working inside the Soviet Union said, you know, the Soviets are genuinely scared that nuclear war is about to break out. There were NATO exercises, and people were really scared. And Reagan said, you know, can they really believe that we're about to launch a nuclear attack? And he came to think about the misunderstandings. And then the third thing, I think we can't leave out because it's really important, is that there was a nuclear freeze movement that was, you know, it was against Reagan in 81, 80, certainly 82, 83. There was a movie that got produced at the time of the nuclear freeze movement that showed on TV. Reagan saw it. So he was responding to sentiment as well.
This is a conversation that will continue in a moment with James Mann, Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon. The three of us hope you'll be with us when we return in a moment.